Hi there, everybody. This is Michelle Denman, and welcome back to actually the second show of Reaching Into the Stars. And I'm so glad that you're joining us from wherever you are in the world, whether it's morning or evening there. Welcome. And I'm real excited because a lot of the themes in the work that I do is spirituality and creativity, and how when we work through our heart, we truly can, you know, manifest just beautiful and amazing things, whether it's through music or arts or dance or poetry, writing. And so I'm really excited. The guest that we have with us today is internationally renowned Chris Spheeris, and he's a real good friend of mine, and I've been following his music for a very long time. I actually was introduced to his music in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a long time ago, and felt really drawn and connected to his heart and the inspiration that comes through the sound that he brings forth, and was lucky and fortunate enough to get to meet him. And Chris is based in Arizona, and I was fortunate to be a part of experiencing a lot of his shows and his music, and I'm real excited that Chris is with us today to share his heart and his music with all of us. So, hi there, Chris.
Hi, Michelle. Hi, everybody.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
Good, so you're still...
I'm having a good moment.
You're still in the States? You're still in the States with us?
Still in the what?
You're still in the United States at this time?
Yes, I'm in the United State of Oneness.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure you were still in the country.
Yeah, no, I'm still. I'm in Arizona. I'm in Sedona right now.
Well, I know you're in Greece a lot.
It's a lovely day.
Yeah, I know that you travel to Greece a lot, and you know, you've shared with me that you get a lot of inspiration in Greece. But you had told me that you had found this magical place of Sedona. You want to tell us about how that happened?
Yeah, it actually found me.
Okay.
This was in the late '80s, when the whole New Age thing was just starting to bust wide open. And I was looking for a new place to live, and I kind of put that out to the universe. And what came back to me was a brochure that I got in the mail that said, come to the Milwaukee Public Library and meet extraterrestrials. I thought, well, that sounds like an unusual opportunity. So I did show up for that, and the small sort of auditorium was absolutely completely packed, standing room only. Everybody wanted to see the extraterrestrials. And it ended up to be about 10 humanoid-looking figures that seemed, you know, I mean, good imitations of humans. They got up on stage and did things like channeling, toning, things that to us are sort of passé now, you know, maybe even corny. But at that time, it was really courageous and new and bold. And they got up and did all this, and they said, our purpose here is to co-create heaven on earth. And, I mean, it sounded like a really lovely goal. And they were all about love, and their format was highly unusual. Anyway, make a long story short, they found me at halftime, and three of them walked up to me and said, we were talking about you. We recognize you. I'm like, well, what does that mean? They said, we think you might be one of us. And I'm like, well, I don't really, you know, relate to the extraterrestrial origin thing. I mean, none of us are from the Earth anyway, but I'm talking about being from the Pleiades or whatever, wherever they were from. Well, anyway, they invited me to dinner. So we met at a bowling alley the next night on vinyl sparkling upholstery in little booths. And I took one look at all of them, and they all looked like they were just stoned on love. And it was really rather intoxicating to see all these people focusing on love and being in love. And we made friends, and about a month later, they invited me to come to Sedona for something called the Harmonic Convergence.
Oh, wow. What year was that?
Remember that whole thing?
Is that like the 80s?
Like, I think it was 87 or 88,
okay.
But it might be 87.
Okay.
I think it was 87. And it's when 122,000 rainbow warriors are going to ascend into their perfect format, the oneness, whatever. It's kind of an elitist sort of thing, though, because there's only 122,000 of them. So if you're left out, it's like, wow. Talk about abandonment issues.
To be chosen.
But anyway, long story short, they invited me there for the Harmonic Convergence, and the second I saw Sedona, rounded a corner on this highway, took one look at how beautiful it was, I had tears in my eyes, and I thought, I'm finally home. I've been looking for this place all my life. And so 20 years later, I'm still here. How's that for a nice short story?
Was the mothership there when you arrived?
The mothership was waiting for me, really.
And aliens even bowl. They actually bowl, huh?
They laid out the green carpet for me at their house.
Wow. So did you continue to hang out with this group?
I did, and they were brilliant. Some of the concepts that they were dealing with, they were over my head at the time. I recently went back and looked at some of their literature and their workbooks and realized things that I'm sort of stumbling upon now, they were saying, 20 years ago. Not that wisdom has an age, a time, but maturity does. And they really gave me a concept for some really beautiful, beautiful themes in my life. They had these little slogans like, I am the entire universe expressing itself through a single point. Very profound, very intense. I just wrote a meditation that comes to that conclusion. Okay, so I'm like, wow, I'm back at their wisdom,
Isn't that amazing?
Follow your spirit without hesitation. What a beautiful slogan. They made bumper stickers that said that.
Mm.
And so they were all about being true and authentic and real to themselves. They didn't require consensus for their vote on what's true and what's real. And very, very influential group of people in my life, and I'll never forget them. It was really a beautiful, beautiful phase.
So did you see that as like sort of a destiny kind of thing, like that, do you believe in kind of being called?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I believe it now more than ever because I see that so much is orchestrated rather than, not by my ego, but by the forces that be. In fact, now I know I'm orchestrated by the forces that be. So not to get too profound, but it really calls in the question of what is free will.
Wow.
If I believe in a higher power, then if the higher power is orchestrating everything, which I believe it is, then free will is rather a small sort of egocentric concept.
Exactly.
So yeah, I do believe in destiny. I do believe that, the universe moves us in different directions. There are currents of manifestation, there are frequencies, and just like a crystal can crystallize under certain conditions, so do events crystallize with the right environment.
Beautiful.
And I kind of see my life as a series of events crystallizing, a series of movements that are orchestrated by things that are way too profound for me to understand.
So was it the first CD that came, like, it almost seems like the music comes through you in a way. And was that first CD, were you in Arizona when you were inspired? That with Pathways?
I was one CD in. I had done my first CD. It was fairly successful for that genre of music. It was a CD called Desires of the Heart. And that happened through destiny. I was literally manufacturing cassettes in my mother's basement with tape decks that I borrowed, and one of those cassettes ended up in the hands of a distributor and then an A&R person in New York, and I got a call from Columbia Records one day and said, Chris Ferris, and I'm like, yes, this is Mickey Eichner, head of A&R and Columbia Records in New York. I've heard your music recently, and I'd like you to come to New York and talk to us about your career.
Wow.
And I said, are you kidding? Is this a joke? And he said, no, not at all. So the first question I said, what did you hear? I just wanted to sort of tune into where he was coming in. He said it was beautiful. And that was it. That was enough. That sold me. And that was a stroke of destiny. I kind of literally went from the basement to the largest record company in the world.
Wow.
In just a matter of months, and then release Desires of the Heart. Pathways to Surrender, I just knew there was something else up. I needed a change to create that. So when I got to Sedona, it was a very, very open place in a very, very open time, in the open era of our culture. And it inspired songs like Walk With Me and Where the Angels Fly, and of course all the instrumentals and big long rite of passage piece, which is all about, I think it's all about the death of the ego.
Yes.
Not to be too literal, but it's all about transitioning.
Chris, do you actually, when songs are coming, do you actually hear the music and then you play it, or how does that process work for you?
Oh, that's a really good question. It's been different. It's been different many times. I think right now, and I can really only speak for now, hearing it and playing it is all instantaneous. Mm-hmm. It's all simultaneous.
Okay.
I will literally sit down and something will just sort of occur.
Mm-hmm.
What role I play, the most important role I think my consciousness plays, my awareness plays, is the editing role. It's deciding, you know, if I play for 4 hours straight, which 30 seconds or 1 minute or 2 minutes of that 4 hours is going to have some enduring value.
Wow.
But as far as being inspired, my inspirations don't take any direction anymore. I think my life has been following inspiration. And so I kind of go where inspiration is, and now living and being inspired are pretty much the same thing for me.
Wow. But will you have a moment, like say, you know, you'll be sleeping and you wake up in the morning and you have a song or something you want to run to the keyboard, or does that ever happen in that way?
Yeah, it actually has happened, mm-hmm. but those are not the songs I usually keep.
Okay. Okay.
But sometimes, you know, I'll be, you know, this is what's really beautiful, and this is where I owe a lot to other artists. I might be sitting in a performance somewhere, in a theater. I might be listening to someone else perform, or I might be watching a movie, or I might be at a poetry reading, or I might just have something interesting on my sound system playing on the CD player. And a lot of times, or sometimes, it happens where I get an inspiration right there, and I start writing lyrics, or I start feeling the sense of a concept for a song that has absolutely nothing to do with what I'm listening to, but somehow has been inspired by the frequency that this particular artist has transmitted through their work.
Wow.
And that's sort of where I start to, not define, but characterize what is art and what is creativity and what is inspiration.
Mm.
And I think that for me, and I can only speak for myself, art and inspiration and creativity are a process through which a certain frequency is brought into form and transmitted through that form.
Mm.
So if I experience the state of consciousness that is inspired, and I feel a quickening of my energy on some level, for me to be able to give that a form, whatever form that may be, it makes absolutely no difference, that somehow the audience, through experiencing that, can also enter that frequency. That, to me, is how I look at art.
Wow.
And I've seen it, you know, I mean, I experience all the time in paintings, in theater, in music, dance. It's
wow.
not so much about the lyrics or the song or the colors they paint or the brush strokes or even, you know, the movement of the dance. It's how I feel through the process of experiencing it.
That is beautiful. I love what you said when you said a quickening of the energy, or the quickening of the frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sort of moment, and you said, it's like what came to me is like the materialization then of that coming into form, that whatever you want to call it, that sort of inspiration comes through. I find that so profound, what you just said. And do you find that all the time, or does it sometimes stronger than other times?
Oh, no, it's definitely not all the time. I wish it were. I'd love to be able to say that, but, you know, I'm definitely a human being that has, you know, ins and outs and ups and downs and all that. And but I find it in a lot of places now. It's not just in art. You know, I find it in nature, and I find it in social interaction, and I find it in irony and humor, and I and a lot of times I find it in what a great sense of humor the universe has by setting up the most ridiculous of circumstances just to let us know that someone up there is indeed laughing. Well, up there, down there, out there, in there,
yeah.
Everywhere. Okay.
Yes.
Let's be clear about that.
Yes. That's really beautiful, and it feels to me when you were saying that, I kind of got like a dose of sort of that inspiration and how that would manifest here, whether it's in song or, you know, in any specific, you know, form that it could come through. And is it always, I mean, can you always say it's related to a personal experience in your life like that where, you know, you could say, oh, I can really relate to this in my own life, or is it something that just come out of nowhere? Like where it has nothing
all
to
of
do
the
with...
above. Okay. All of the above, Michelle, yeah.
Okay.
Hang on for a second. You might hear just a slightly loud noise for a second. I'm turning off a little sonic distraction here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay, now I can hear you better. No, it's not specific like that. You know, in my earlier career, I could trace some of my early inspirations. Oh, you know, I broke up with my girlfriend and I wrote, you know, I don't know, Field of Tears or something. I could say that. But it doesn't really work that way for me anymore. What I found is that I started to look at what does art mean to me as an artist? Like, why am I doing this? You know, am I doing this simply as a translator or a transmitter of energy and frequency? Yeah, partially. But on a personal level, what am I as artist? Why is my spiritual journey taking me on this ride, or I should say my human journey taking me on this ride? And one of the things that came to me was that if I don't apply to my life what I learn through my art and my creativity, I'm really missing the point. And what that means is all the lessons I learn as far as listening for inspiration, becoming available to, let's use the word for now, channel creativity or channel inspiration, or, you know, channel that vitality that happens when I'm kind of lifted above my my regular, what's the word, status quo, to become creator, to fulfill the role of creator, to feel a sense of mission and of purpose. You know, so what is it about that? Well, applying that to my life, I find that in order to make my life meaningful, I have to look for that in my life. I have to look for the things that inspire me in my life. I have to follow my spirit without hesitation. I have to follow what inspires me in my life and write those notes in my life the same way I'm writing those notes in the music. Why do I have to do that? Because that is my lesson, because that is the gift I've been given to be able to experience life in that way. To experience it any differently would somehow take my art and my creativity and put it in its own little elitist box and say, oh, yes, I can put the artist hat on, but I'm just a regular schmuck living my life. Well, that isn't quite how it works for me.
Yeah.
It's more like I am living this experience, and I'm going to be translating this experience through my art to anyone who finds it inspiring or interesting or whatever. And so that is basically what I'm doing here, or why I'm doing it. Not so much consciously. I see that in retrospect.
That is beautiful. So if there are these kind of universal themes that touch us all, people, whether they're aware of it or not, you know, will probably really feel that, some level of what you'd call the heart or relationship or something. It's my senses when I'm talking to you, and it's really cool to hear you explain it this way, because it's like having that awareness, but at the same time, you know, you're an instrument. You know, you're living this, and at the same time, you're an instrument. It's like both. It's really beautiful to see how that would come together.
I'm getting more and more that we're all instruments.
Yes.
And the more I'm aware of that for myself, the more peace I find in my life.
Oh.
You know, so life isn't just a matter of patting myself on the back and punishing myself alternately. It's it's a matter of accepting the vehicle that I am and everything that works through me, and trying to find meaning and humor and joy and love within all that.
Yes.
You know, someone asked me, I hope I'm not talking too much here, but...
No.
Someone asked me the other day. They said, "Do you like yourself?" And I started laughing because I don't really understand the question. I said, "I can't answer that." And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, you're asking me if I like myself, which actually puts one thing into two different places. So which me is the one who's liking and which me is the one who's being liked or not being liked?
Mm-hmm.
And so just by the nature of that question, it was very poignant because it shows me that that's a very common question, especially in kind of the self-help field.
Yeah.
You know, love yourself. Well, I already am myself, so who is there to love? You know, I would say forget about yourself. Obliterate yourself. Become one. Lose yourself.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
And then we still have to pay the rent, right?
Right. I'm not saying to become all faced out. What I'm saying is become one with your experience and forget about all the judgment and all the, you know, do you love yourself? Do you hate yourself? You know, I mean, self-judgment is possibly the worst disease on the planet, you know, because then you start applying self-judgment to everybody else, and then everything is a reflection of yourself. So, you know, all that negativity is just amplified everywhere, you know, whereas, you know, for me, when I start realizing that we're all a process, we're all divine expression, you know, we're all a field of flowers. So which flower is wrong? You know, which is right? You know, which is better? Which is worse? Which has more value in that field? You know? And that's how I see it. It kind of levels the playing field of ego and, you know, all the righteousness and all the morality and stuff, because basically I think everyone is just being who they are. They're being... Okay, this is a funny... I'm trying to make this, turn this into English because I'm not sure if it'll work. But I'm being beinged. In other words, right now, I'm not just being, I'm being beinged.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And there's probably some better words for that. But I am, you know, I'm in the process of being created constantly, you know. So my beingness is being beinged at all times. But anyway, I'll let that one go, but you understand
beautiful.
What I'm saying.
It's beautiful because what was coming to me is the innocence and everything. And really, at the end of the day, we are all innocent. Really. And when you were explaining that, like the purity of a rose or something natural, if you take away all of that other stuff, then it really just comes down to that innocence.
Well, that's a beautiful way to put it, because, you know, I think innocence is the most wonderful, sweetest, most beautiful gift on earth, and I think it's the nature. It really is the nature of all things.
Aww.
You know, it's sort of human perverted intellect that takes the innocence out of things.
Yes.
But, you know, as I'm talking, I'm watching two hawks outside my window.
Aww.
Circling in a canyon. And now, that isn't the most beautiful, innocent thing in the world, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I was looking at five birds that were sitting right here in front of me at the same time as well. And the purity of, you know, what's natural, what's real. And there's something that I'll never forget that you said to me, and it sticks with me all the time, about our humanity and about being more human. And that really hit me. You said this to me a couple weeks ago. And that, you know, if we're going to take any kind of spiritual path, let's be more human. Rather than trying to always abandon it. Like, everyone's trying to escape it all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, what I did was I kind of put the word humanity and spirituality next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I think what most of us acknowledge as spiritual is simply a fuller expression of our humanity.
Mm.
You know, it's not like the airy part of us. We have the body, you know, the earthy part, the animal part, and then we have, you know, the spirit, which is the angel part. So we're like these monkey gods walking around.
Mm.
And, you know, I think that schism is sort of it's a dysfunctional sort of a paradigm for us being these awkward, confused chimeras that are a kind of an uncomfortable oil and water blend of spirit and animal. It sometimes blends and sometimes doesn't. I don't see it that way at all.
Wow.
I just see that we're constantly evolving and we're being evolved, and that what we see as spirituality is just simply discovering our humanity, the same way, you know, like a beautiful rose becomes a bud and then the bud becomes a blossom. I mean, it's a flower. It's it's a natural progression.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And so I think what you said about the whole split thing, and that's what I was talking about, is for us to not only to strive to become more human, to to allow ourselves to become more human, because that's what our humanity wants to do anyway.
That's really beautiful, because what you were talking, what came to me is sort of these old programs of guilt and, you know, like that somehow this is a dirty form, or, you know, all these things we've been taught, that somehow this isn't holy and that we should negate it. You know,
not religion too much, but that's been a paradigm through, you know, Orthodox religion for a while.
Right.
The body is lowly and all this other kind of stuff, and that we're, you know, we're born in sin and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'm sorry, but that's not something that I can ascribe to, because
yeah.
I think people are born into innocence, not born into darkness. And, and we have this birthright to not only live in innocence, but to rediscover it after we've had to go through whatever that initiation is that we all seem to go through.
Mm. What do you mean by that? Tell me more.
There is a socialization process that for some reason most cultures have developed, which takes a beautiful child who believes in magic and endlessness, in miraculousness, and joy, and endless love, and all these beautiful things, and somehow disciplines this child into believing in limitation, into structure, into thinking in boxes. And I can't say it happens to everybody, but I can say as a general trend of humanity, this is sort of how humans are able to organize themselves and each other into a society, by sort of brainwashing everyone that we're all very limited, and so our place as a piece of the machinery is only natural. And this is something I've been thinking about lately, where there's two camps, and there's endless points in between these two camps. And one camp is that we are created, and the other camp is that we are creative. And one camp says, I'll believe it when I see it, and the other camp says, I'll see it when I believe it.
Mm. Yeah.
And so what the second one says is more like the child that believes in magic and believes in Santa Claus and believes in the Tooth Fairy and believes in angels and believes in all this stuff. It's that belief in the miraculous that, as a culture, as a world, you know, as one race, we seem to have somehow agreed to not see that anymore.
Oh.
You know, and it's only these wonderful little pockets of hope that come up and say, no, we can be this and we can do that. And we are endless and we are an extension of divinity and we can have miracles happen in our lives. And how beautiful is that? And I think, fortunately, there seems to be a resurgence of that, because I think you can't keep a good person down too long. So you can squelch that belief, you can subdue it. But in the big picture, I think humanity wants to be empowered, and the human spirit wants to take its power back. And I think that maybe is a hopeful new trend.
Oh, that's beautiful. Because I hear what you're saying, and I witness this every day. Like, for me, I look at the world the way it is right now. To me, it's a miracle all the time that we're alive, that we're still functioning. I see it as even the little things, that the fact that we are all still getting around, no matter what's going on, we're all still breathing, and that sacredness of life, I see all the time. And so I love to hear you say that, because I feel like it is in the really little things. It's like the small things. Like getting up, you wake up and you're breathing. You know, you still have a pulse. Given, if people, not that we'll go into that, if people really knew what was going on, and then the fact that we're all still alive in here, that is a miracle every day that we have life.
Isn't it amazing how the entire universe just fits?
Yes.
It all fits. I mean,
yes.
All this stuff fits.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, what a miracle is that? There's not one thing that's bigger than the universe, and not one thing that's smaller.
That's right.
It all just fits.
Yes.
And that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, and it's working. Whether people want to believe that or not, I feel it is working. There is, even in the minute, because I always look at it in the minute, that I never take for granted the fact that I can wake up and breathe and still function here, you know, and given, you know, what, you know, we could interpret as going on in this world. It's so, I mean, to me, in some ways, life is so fragile. I mean, I could look at it one day and go, wow, it's really, we're really fragile. And yet we're surviving. You know,
yeah, and the other way to look at it is to see how resilient life is.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I just saw this horribly, horribly pathetic video of a polar bear this morning. And they were showing how the Arctic up in Alaska, northern Canada, is melting.
Yeah.
And this poor polar bear just looked horrible.
Oh.
And yet it made me think, okay, so let's say the Arctic cap, it melts and all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, all these things start to happen. Well, okay, you know, the ice shelves are gone, and so the water raises, and then so there was 160 tornadoes this week alone, and,
wow,
you know, in the States, and all this stuff is going on. So let's say, okay, that sounds like things are really bad, but, you know, the whole planet could just reshuffle itself as it has before.
Yes.
And then how incredible that a new era will arise that will fill the planet back up with it, with a bounty, until it's time to do whatever it needs to do again.
Wow.
I mean, that's so beautiful. You know,
wow,
we little humans are looking out and going, oh, you know, we have to save the planet. Well, you know, the planet's fine. The planet's not in a hurry. The planet has, you know, how many billions of years till the sun burns out, and then after that, it'll be fine after that, too.
Mm.
You know, the universe is not in a hurry. There's no time there. It's a very different clock out there.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of humans, it's us that we're kind of more concerned about, you know, save us.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Well, here's what's interesting, and I think that, you know, maybe this is a new age of miracles, and maybe that's what we need. And maybe collective prayer and collective thought can actually move mountains, you know, and I think that there's been some evidence of that. And I think that we're going to need a miracle to pull this one off.
Yes.
You know, the global warming and the pollution and the overpopulation, all that stuff.
Yes.
And wouldn't it be amazing to start seeing the type of miracles that we absolutely need start to happen on a global level, so that not only do, you know, certain individuals, you know, start writing these books about how miracles happen in their lives, but what if our entire race starts seeing undisputable miracles occur?
Wow.
I mean, how would that change the paradigm of the individual?
Yes. You know, it's interesting because when you were saying that, I was thinking of, you know, is there this compassion that somehow exists, whether you call it God, Goddess, Mother, Father, whatever you want to call it, but, you know, is there this incredible compassion and mercy on us all the time? And at the same time, what came to me when you were talking is, in history, people, you know, there were masters like, you know, Christ that walked the planet, who did miracles, and the miracles happened right in front of people, and people still denied them. You know, they still could find a reason to say, no, I don't believe. And the miracles were happening all the time. And that's what kind of how I feel, is the miracles are happening all the time.
Mm.
And it almost feels like in the hidden or in the subtle is where the truth really is. And, you know, to really perceive that, I think it's happening all the time. And I don't know what it's going to take anymore. I really don't know anymore what it'll take.
You know, I have to say that what you just said is one of the things I really love about you, is that you are a being that reminds us of exactly that.
Mm.
You know, I haven't always believed that.
Yes.
But in knowing you this amount of time, you've really represented that following your spirit element and believing in that higher element, that if you follow the crumbs, they will lead to the pot of gold or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you just said is really fundamental. It's like, well, they're there already. They're everywhere. And you know what? That's a beautiful concept, and I can't agree more. And thank you for reminding me, you know, that the miracles don't have to be huge.
Right.
that everything is, I mean, if you could only see what I'm looking at right now, what you just said has such a profound impact on me, because I'm looking out at a really beautiful canyon filled with gorgeous green trees.
Mm.
It's late afternoon. The light is turning gold. The beautiful red rock formations way in the background. I mean, it couldn't be more fairy tale.
Oh.
And here you are telling me that, you know, the miracles are everywhere. And I'm like, yeah. It's you, and it's people who do that for humanity that remind us all that life is that miracle in every moment. I mean, you're the guys who keep the fires burning. So thanks for reminding me of that yet once again.
And it's neat because I'm looking at these glistening leaves right now, and the sun is shining on this tree. And just like the leaves are just glistening and glowing like in pure magic, and I'm listening to the birds. And there's this magical element I'm witnessing at this very moment. And so it's like if we want to be blessed, you know, people say, bless me, or, but the blessing, this is the blessing. This is it. The blessing is right here. It's right now. And it's that magical element that if we just, in my opinion, we have to slow down a little bit to be able to witness it. You know,
don't you wonder sometimes if there is a flow to everything and if there is a flow to nature and all that, why do humans seem to be so out of sync? Like, that's something I don't really understand very well.
Yes.
You know, you look at animals, and animals seem to not have that split consciousness.
Yes.
Where they're constantly scrutinizing themselves, going, God, that was dumb of me to hunt that bird, and I missed it, and darn, I'm not a very good hunter. Look at him. He's a really good hunter. You know? We don't really know if that's what they do or not, but it doesn't seem that that's what they spend their time doing. You know, and why is it that humans have developed this ability to split and to self-scrutinize? It's a very bizarre thing that's happened. And I think to recognize it as something, you know, I think it can be both strange and beautiful. Right now I'm still looking at it as something strange because it's so dysfunctional.
Yes.
But there is that coming together into one being that is so lovely.
Yes.
You know, it's the whole Eckhart Tolle thing, and it's the,
yes.
You know, I mean, he's not the only one, of course. There's just, you know, the mystics have all talked about that, about being present, being fully present in that divine state of, you know, the God moment, you know, the ecstatic moment.
Yes.
And the ecstatic moment can be a lifetime.
Exactly.
And there's no room for that splitting off. And maybe if there is, maybe if that's part of being human, we look at it with a sense of humor. You know, we look at it without it getting the best of us. We go, oh, fun. You know, my little detached self is having some fun scrutinizing whatever it thinks is left of me after it detaches.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, and it's the wonderful thing of choice that we're sort of allowed to perceive what we want to perceive. I mean, we're kind of given that gift,
mm-hmm.
To be ourselves. And you know, we can choose to perceive that moment or not, or the magic or not. And the gratitude, you know, what's coming to me is just this gratitude to be able to perceive it.
Mm.
You know?
Well, that's probably what I'm talking about, the positive side of that split.
Exactly.
Yeah, the ability to look at it and go, thank goodness, thank everything.
Exactly.
Thank me.
Exactly, and that, you know, that the ability to listen, and I think that's just such a gift, is the ability to be able to soften enough to be able to feel enough to be able to listen. It kind of requires a simplicity to be able to really feel.
Well, what's really interesting and ironic about that is that, you know, that type of finding your moment, finding yourself,
mm-hmm.
it entails the loss of self.
Yes.
You know, when it's all one and I become one with my experience, there's no room for me there. I am one with everything. So there is no, you know, other me. There is no room to be sitting there wondering or looking at myself and thinking in that moment of a pure experience, you know, whatever it is.
Yes.
You know, thinking, oh, I'm having this wonderful experience while I'm describing it. It's kind of like taking a picture of something. I'm missing the experience.
That's
no.
Right.
Instead, the beautiful ecstatic moment is pure passion. You used that word earlier.
Yes.
And what's cool about that word is something I learned from he was a Franciscan friar, and maybe still is. I just haven't heard from him in a while. He said something to me many, many years ago. He said, the word passion and passive come from the same root. And the implication is that when you are able to become completely passive, you allow, and he didn't use these words exactly, but you allow the universe to flow through you. You become that instrument.
Mm.
You know, St. Francis always said that. Make me an instrument of your peace or of your love, whatever it was. And, you know, it's that beautiful ability to become passive that makes you passionate.
Yes.
Isn't that an interesting way to see it?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's just lovely, you know. It's kind of like good sex, you know. If you're thinking about what you're doing, it's not going to be that good. But if you're so taken by it all, and you're so drawn into, and you trust the moment, you trust your partner, and you surrender to something completely unprecedented,
yes.
Well, there it is. You know?
Exactly.
And I think that's sort of a good example because, you know, some people think that sex is the ultimate. Well, you know, if you sort of take a tantric twist on that, if you don't apply to your life what you learn having good sex, you're missing the point. You know?
Exactly.
So maybe that whole embracing of trust and surrender and the fullness of being and you open that and then life becomes orgasmic.
It's like enjoyment is what I was feeling when you were talking, is to really truly enjoy someone. You can't be thinking like I need to please them or I want them to please me. You have to be out of that completely.
Yeah. Yeah, because if there is a me and a them, then I think the whole concept is missed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because really, I mean, what we're getting at is a unity.
Exactly.
So when it becomes one energy and it becomes one being and it becomes, you know, a four-legged, you know, four-arm, two-headed being, how beautiful is that, you know, one energy?
Yes.
And there is no room to be thinking of, you know, am I pleasing her? Is she pleasing me? You know, gee, should I move to the left or the right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the instructions are sort of given to us. We don't have to go looking for them. We just have to relax, and they will be instructed. And I think that works both in sex and in life.
Yeah.
We just have to learn to listen and trust that what we're listening to is valid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tricky process.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many issues get in the way, and so many sort of ghosts come up and say, "I'm the voice," and then someone, another ghost comes up and goes, "Oh no, I'm the voice," you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have our wounds, and then some sort of protective sub personality comes up and goes, "Oh no, I'm the voice of intuition," you know. Don't do this.
Yeah.
But I think that's the beauty of maturity and the beauty of.
Yeah.
Of entering the labyrinth and going in and discovering what is real and what isn't.
Oh.
And you learn discernment, and pretty soon you know when your wounds are talking, and you know when the purity of now is talking, because the purity of being has an ultimate frequency that's unmistakable.
Exactly.
And it's learning to recognize the frequency of total presence.
Oh.
And that will be the truth.
Exactly. Exactly. And it just feels right. It'll feel right or feel good.
It just feels right,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like an innate, instinctual piece with that.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
I've been talking so darn much, and even though I'm kind of the guest, do you find with the people that you work with, is there a common theme that comes up more than any other theme? Is there something that's an issue, a bigger issue for people these days? Is there a common issue, a most common issue?
Yes. Yeah, there are a couple of common ones, but the biggest one is, what am I supposed to be doing? That's the exact words.
What am I supposed to be doing?
What am I supposed to be doing?
What do you think of that?
Well, that's where, that's that whole, you know, that deconditioning process has to start right there. You know, immediately that, you know, so we go, okay, this is about when you have to start deconditioning, because what I kind of feel and what I've been witnessing is it's almost like what I call a parallel reality. Mm-hmm. And what I see is like people are in this sort of false kind of, I don't know if you call it a false god or, you know, a false something, but it's really truly where that's where you start. And that's where you start to, what I feel, have to embrace innocence. Because if you can just start right there and realize, okay, I'm missing the mark here, you know, and just realizing that, and you start to just sort of fall slowly into innocence, the whole process, you'll just start unwinding and unraveling out of that sort of trap and fall slowly into love. I really feel we have to fall. And it's not about trying to climb the rope or, you know, jump the fence, or, but to fall into love and start kind of almost like fall apart.
Well, do you find it interesting that, I mean, the way you worded it might be exactly what people say, but what should I be doing? Doesn't the word should have an implication to it?
Absolutely.
You know, it's some sort of
Absolutely.
Authority where there's a correct way to do it. It's almost like, you know, hey, Mommy, hey, Daddy, what should I be doing
exactly.
right now?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, wanting to be good. Yeah, wanting to be good enough. I think that's probably what's underneath it all is, am I good enough? You know, can I be good? I want to be good.
Yeah, which implies that someone feels out of sync with themselves.
Exactly. No? Exactly.
But who hasn't asked that question? Gee, what should I be doing? What, you know, what's my purpose here? What, you know, what's my mission? What's this? What's
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you feel, I don't know, I mean, maybe I'll just speak for myself, but I feel like there isn't a should, and maybe
right.
when someone used to use this expression on me, it says, you know, don't should on me, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And that's like, you know, this big guilt trip, as if there is a should, and there is
exactly.
what is required here. I don't think we came here being indentured to our existence. You know, I don't think we owe existence anything. I think serving
wow.
is an option.
Wow.
And I think letting go of that is a big burden. You know,
yes.
it's like we don't have to amount to anything. It's not required
exactly.
of us.
Exactly. That's really cool. It's like freedom. I mean, that's the ultimate freedom, is that there's not like a rule book that says you should be doing this, and if you're, you know, like, if you do this, you're good. If you don't, you're not. It's the old, that old tape. Chris, it is so cool connecting with you, and I want to make sure that everyone has a chance to experience your music, and I wanted to give out your website address so that people can
sure.
see how good-looking you are and also and hear your music.
Well, the website is chrisspheris.com, chrisspheris.com. There's a whole bunch of music and poetry, and there's some images and things. And then there's a new website going up right about now called spherismedia.com, and that focuses on my photography and my digital imaging.
Oh, cool.
So there's a couple of opportunities right there.
Oh, that's exciting. So I know you've been touring and traveling and had some wonderful concerts in Lake Tahoe, and you've got some more coming up really soon.
Yeah, I'm playing Sedona as we speak. The next few days, but
wonderful.
Yeah, I'll be around. People can look at the performance schedule. I do perform in little clumps of performances. So I just did my early summer thing, and there'll probably be another one in fall somewhere.
Oh, that's so awesome, Chris. I'm so excited that people got to experience more of you, because you're such a gift, and I find just being your friend is a gift, and I'm honored because I've learned so much from you. So thank you for.
Oh. Well, thank you so much, Michelle, because, I mean, as friends, we always talk. We always have wonderful, inspiring conversations, and your presence, I always find, quickens me. So thanks once again.
Ditto.
All right, and lots of love to everybody.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in, you guys. Have a wonderful evening or day wherever you are in the world. Much love.